Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, George M. from San Diego.
George, alcoholic. George! Stand before you, clean and sober for a little over 16 years, but by the grace of God, Alcoholic Anonymous, and the fellowship, and most of all, to those that came before me. I always make a point, I'll tell the people that came before me, thank you. You laid a path for me to follow. Okay. With that said, I'm going to take a pause here. Can all our military veterans stand up? Please. Come on. Thank you. We serve our country. We deserve our day. Okay. So I will talk about me because that's what this is. It's my experience, strength, and hope. Okay? I will refrain as best as I can from saying you have to do this or have to do that. I don't come to AA to get a class. I come up to AA to listen to people so they might share something that might be affecting me at the moment or in the future. With that said, as a now retired drug and alcohol counselor, and substance abuse assessor, sometimes I tend to go into class mode. So just somebody throw something at me. No. I know those guys over there would throw something at me. Just holler at me. My alcoholism got out of control sometime in, I want to say, 25 years, 30-year period when I was about that age, because I come from a loving family, great parents, no alcohol or drug problems in my whole family, so I can't blame anybody for it except me. And so come from a little island called Puerto Rico. And down there, when you're about this high, you can go to a bar and ask for rum and coke. They'll give it to you. You ask for cigarettes, they cart you. So for me, drinking was an actual thing. And my dad was a drinker. Every day he'd come home from work, kiss my mom, sit in the lounge chair. My mom would bring him a scotch. He'd light up a cigar, do a scotch. Nobody talked to him. And then he would whistle, okay, everybody report. What do you need? What do you want? You know, that was his time. And I thought that I could be that. I tried to be my dad because I love my dad. He is and will always be my hero. Dad. And tough, heavy drinker. Okay. Through high school, regular drinker. But I noticed one thing after I joined NAA, that in high school, every time we would skip a day to go out to the beach or something, they would come up and ask me, how much beer and how much alcohol you think you need? Where's the coolers at? I was always involved in that side of the partying. That was it. Then at an early age, no, actually when I finished high school, I told my dad, I don't want to go to college. And he goes, that's fine. You got a year. Within a year, you move out, you make more money than me, or you join the military. But I'm not supporting a bum. My dad was a man of little words. He didn't like to repeat himself. So about the year was coming around, I was a freelance photographer and designer for the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. And I went by a recruiting office. I liked the pictures, started talking to the recruiter. He gave me some pamphlets just to look at the picture. That night, I opened one of those pamphlets, and it said, it's not a job, it's an adventure. I better get ready to do something about it. So I went to the recruiter, and he talked me into it by saying, okay, so the Navy is going to supply you with everything, your roof, your food, your medical, your dental, and everything. And then we're going to give you a paycheck. And with that paycheck, you're going to chase women and drink. Ta-da! I found heaven. I joined the Navy, did a 15-year tour, proud tour for 15 years. I became an air combat controller, controlling the dogfights of the fighters. Not too many people did it. Only a few of us were qualified to do it. And they paid me extra money for it. They gave me bonuses every time I reenlisted. At the time, you know, $16,000 bonus in my pocket. It was a lot of fun. That was a lot of partying. Then, of course, I had a couple bumps in the road, a couple wives. What can I say? You know, they were like Navy tours, 4 years out the window. So anyway, best woman in the world, the best people in the world I married. But at the time, it was all about me. And the grass didn't look green on the other side. The grass looked really, 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 really good on the other side. As they say, you only go to eat in a restaurant when you're not being fed at home. So anyway, enough said about that. So at 15 years, I was stationed here teaching air controlling at FitzyPac up in Point Loma. And it's really hard. And I was drinking like there was no tomorrow. And what happens? When you're in the ship, you got this forced sobriety. You're out to sea. You got commitments. You do stuff. Your life depends. The life of others depend on what you're doing. But when you're stationed here next to Catalina Bar and all those bars, and, you know, you're military, you got a tab going. It was every day, to the point that I was going to teach air controlling with one eye closed and the other one halfway shut. And that was affecting me. So I did what a lot of alcoholics do. I found a solution. I started using cocaine. The Navy frowned some air controllers that use cocaine and teach, you know, in the influence. So I got caught. They offered me help. I said, F you. Left. You will see that I progress in a lot of things in life, you know. I joined the Navy as a deckhand. I became an air controller, working air conditioner and being paid extra money. I got kicked out of the Navy at 14 years, 9 months, and 22 days. I get no benefits other than say I'm a veteran. That's my fault. Nobody's fault. But got kicked out, started doing some things. I became an entrepreneur. Between the state and the feds, they decided to put a stop to it. I'm not going to give you war stories, but I'm going to tell you this, that for 3.5 years, I was in MCC fighting a case. They were trying to extradite me for Italy for 44 years in prison, an Italian prison. I was trying to psych myself up to commit suicide because I've been to Italy jail to help sailors that got picked up on the street, and they're dungeons. And I said, there's no way I'm going there. I'm not brave enough to commit suicide, it's turned out, thank God. So after 3.5 years fighting the case, a great attorney, by the grace of God, unknown to me, grace of God, I get released because of a fluke. They made a mistake. Not a mistake. They just gave me time in the United States. Then I couldn't be extradited. So I got released one night at 9 o'clock in the morning without expecting it. I mean, 9 o'clock at night. All the Hotel San Diego had a liquor store. I went after praying for 3.5 years for God to give me a break. Actually cursing at God, because if I was his child, why was this happening to me? And the last 13 months, I was in isolation because I'm not I don't play well with others. So I go ahead and go to the bar, get a cup, 140, a pack of cigarettes, second 40, now I'm broke. I see a guy going in a suit, kind of stumbling, going to a parking lot. I happen to see a 2x4 laying against the wall. One of those that goes inside the pallets, got the two little notches, it'll never forget. I said, oh, that's what you want me to do. So I follow him, hit him over the head, took his money, and went to the Connect. That is less than an hour after being released, after 3.5 years, I committed a crime. And I was still willing to argue with you. My life was not unmanageable. And I was not powerless over alcohol and drugs. Well, a series of events got me to the San Diego Freedom Ranch. A judge told my federal PO, you need to go to the Freedom Ranch. Now, I've heard of the Freedom Ranch. I said, who the hell wants to go 3 miles past where Jesus lost his shoes? Come on. And it's not co-ed? You kidding me? And so I go ahead, follow directions, because I was homeless. I was sleeping, actually, in the Bank of America. There's a little alleyway between the building that holds the public defender's office and the Bank of America. There's a lot. I used to sleep in that alley. Okay, just real quick, I retired from working for the public defender's office in that building, and the 10th floor had an office. That's how God worked for me. So anyway, I I ended up at the ranch. I've been in the military. It's easy for me to follow directions, to follow structure. I do well on the structure. I got there, started following structure. I was supposed to be there for 4 months. I said, no, I'm not going to do the whole 4 months. One thing led to another. I did my fifth step with a gentleman sitting here in the room, now my sponsor, Rich B. And he kind of coached me through a lot of things. I went to ask him questions and stuff like that. Now, he don't remember most of it because I'm telling you, the guy goes to that place for, it's been, I think, over 20 years, every Thursday to read from the big book to the guys. And you talk about not only inspiration, somebody to follow, somebody that's showing what has to be done. So at 4 months, they talked me into staying there as a volunteer. What's my pay? A pack of cigarettes a day. That's the most expensive pack of cigarettes I've ever had because you work 12 goddamn hours. Sorry. The thing is that at 8 months, they offered me a job. What's my pay? $80 a week. God, $80 a week? Wow, what the hell? My boss then and great friend told me, what do you have waiting for you down the hill? I only knew three type of people in San Diego. Drug users, drug sellers, and cops, because I was either using, buying, or getting arrested. That was it. I was really honest because somebody told me that honesty was the key to my recovery. I didn't picture my ex-girlfriend, my job. No. Okay. There's a reason God is telling this knucklehead for me to stay. I'll follow that God thing. I had a problem with God at the time. I was brought up Catholic because I was about this small. Somebody threw water at me and said, you're fucking Catholic. I said, you're Catholic. I had no say-so. I had no chance to pick whatever it was. You know? So, in my military thing, it said, Catholic. Oh, it's Catholic, you know? Okay. I was brought up with a God that did not forgive the stuff that I had done. So I had a problem with that. Now, interlude about God. I found God, capital G, small O, small D. It's not capital G, capital O, small and capital D, initials for anything. It's God for your creator. If you want to check, go into Google and ask Google to give you Webster definition of God. And it will tell you God on the capital G, small O, small D is, and has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with anything. You can call God, you can have Mother Nature. My first God was Mother Nature. I heard a Native American share about grandfather while I was at the ranch. And I said, wow, I can relate to that guy. So I went up. Oh, Cody, where you at? The speaker, the 10-minute speaker. Awesome, bro. I figured that you'd give my story in about 10 minutes because I'm right where you're at. Wait till I tell you about going shopping. Where are we at? Oh, the God. So I went, Cody, can I borrow your God? Why? Because I can relate to him. I see him every day, Mother Nature, you know, birds flying, everything. And that was the best thing I did. Because one thing you do at the Freedom Ranch, you see a lot of nature, beautiful birds. You see an ant carrying the boulder 10 times its size. You know, what the fuck? Hell, what makes a duck fly 4,000 miles while getting shot to get laid? And back to get, and getting shot again. You know, whatever that is my God. Okay? Mother Nature. So in the mornings, I would look up with this beautiful white moon right when you come out of the door at the Freedom Ranch. I said, okay, God, you're a beautiful artist. Let's start with that. And then I'd go by this oak tree and pray. And say, and my prayer was, God, thank you for my sobriety and please take care of my dad. I found out at the ranch at 30 days my dad had died 3 years before, and they were looking for me. They were just about to hire a private investigator because they look California, that they look, but they didn't look into the federal system. My niece works for the feds down in Puerto Rico for the courts, and it never occurred to her. And when she did, she went, holy crap, we want him back. But the thing is that was my prayer, simple as that. Things change unknowingly to me. I started following the program. At the beginning was just to get 30 days, enough so for me to go out and do the old, you know, get a little bit of dope and sell it and make more money, you know, again, and start dealing with kilos eventually. At 60 days, I said, you know what? At 30 days, I said, I feel good. I'll just wait 60 days before I leave. Then I'll just rob a bank. And then at 60 days, I feel really good. I said, I'll just wait till 90 days, and then I'll be able to rob an armor truck. I'm feeling really good. Well, somewhere in there, God intervened and told the knuckleheads at the ranch, hey, ask this guy to stay. He's dangerous. So I stayed. I follow what I call God's direction. Everything that the steps are doing for me is manifest in my life. Because from step one, where I did 100%, step two, two-part step, not only my life was unmanageable, I'm powerless over alcohol and drugs. And my prayer at night, every night, it finished with, thank you for and continue to give me the strength to fight my weaknesses, in plural. Hell, I have a house with a bunch of knuckleheads that live there. You know, I rent rooms for them. And they went to the casino yesterday. You know how tempting it was for me to go? But God gave me the power to say, Paxan, I'll just stay in the garage and keep working in my little shop. And I had a blast. They came back all sad with, I lost money. I said, really? No, you didn't lose money. You paid the casino. Right. You know? So anyway, back to the Freedom Ranch. So I stayed there. And then at 8 months, they offered me a job of $80 a week. And with $80 a week for a couple of years, I bought a little white station wagon that 2 owners before belonged to my sponsor, and Ford Escort station wagon, like I was told. It's good enough to take people to meetings and to carry big books in the back, a box of big books. Sure. I emerged myself. Then came the surprise, hey, you want to go to school? I said, sure, why not? Give me a reason to get out of here. So I went to school and became a certified drug and alcohol counselor. I thought the Freedom Ranch would be the last place I stay. That was going to be it. At 7 years, I had the edge. You know, what's out there? It's time. So I told the Freedom Ranch, guys, I'm moving on. I had a job lined up 10 days before I left the Freedom Ranch. They told me the job that was not coming. They were not going to hire from the outside. I said, well, God's taken me this long. He didn't carry me this long to drop me now. So I left, started cleaning houses for a friend of mine and staying in one of his sober livings. And then 3 days a week and 2 days a week, I would go down to, I launched GTM Sobriety Advisor Services, a private program, a private business. And I went to the court and did something illegal. I started buying my business card. Every time I went by an attorney or somebody was talking about drug and alcohol, I said, hey, if you need to talk, call me. And one thing led to another. Somebody made me an offer. I ended up managing a Serenity Falls Recovery up in Valley Center, opening and owning Serenity Falls Recovery. Real good. Financial was great. Had a Mercedes. I was rolling. More money. And I started projecting. Well, shortly thereafter, something started happening to me. I wasn't feeling well. I went to do some blood work, and I get a call from the doctor a Saturday morning. He goes, you need to drop everything you're doing and you need to go to the ER right now. I said, why? I said, you need to get to the ER right now. You're poisoned. The reason you keep throwing up is your kidneys have quit on you. So I drove to the ER. They bitch at me for driving. I was checking in. I pass out. I wake up and I got tubes in my chest and a shunt in my arm. And they're saying, you go into the dialysis machine. For the next 5 years, I did dialysis. I was doing it from 6 in the afternoon to 2 in the morning, 8 hours, 3 days a week. But because I had a God that I believed on beyond any doubt, I have no problem accepting life in life terms. Everything, there's a reason for everything. The reason for me to go through what I went through is to become the drug and alcohol counselor that I became. The reason for me to go through the kidney problem and 5 years of dialysis and being told, we're not going to find a kidney for you. it's not going to work, George. The doctor. I remember the doctor said, I hate this because I want to keep you. I love what you do for a living. You know, how many people you've helped. I can't. I can't guarantee you. I said, God will take care of that. You would not believe that I started kind of saying goodbye. Oh, and I started burning like my credit cards. I didn't care. The insurance would pay for them. What the heck? The Mercedes, who cares? Kept driving around, you know. Oh, it's a lease. I can put a million miles on it. I'm not going to pay for it. The insurance is. I'm going to be dead. Start saying my goodbyes. I take my fishing rods to a good friend of mine, Tommy Gomes, and I say, hey, here's all my fishing stuff. Donate it. He goes, no, I'll save it for you. Ah, yeah, sure. So I'm saying my goodbyes. I'm going to go down to Puerto Rico and wait and do the houses there and wait for the good Lord to call on me. I'll spend some time with the family. I get a call from a gentleman, Randy Ledoux, and Tommy Gomes. They both called me that night saying, hey, a friend of ours, his son just passed out. He just posted on Facebook. He just passed out. He would like to talk to you about donating, about seeing if it's a match for you. Now, the chances are 1 in 100,000 because I've done the math. I've read, my family already checked. I'm not going to find one. Paul calls me, and we talk 30 minutes. He goes, my son would like somebody like you, a 19-year-old kid who was in the first year of college for computer science and had autism. Okay, he was homeschooled, and his family loved, the kid was a great kid. He was 6'2", really young. He can't even eat spices. He didn't like it. Had passed away from a brain aneurysm. So I gave him the information to my nurse. Now, I'm not a morning person. In the morning, the next day, I get a call. I go, who the fuck this? And they say, George, the nurse. Oh, shit, I missed an appointment. I said, no. You need to go to HR, do your paperwork. We got a perfect match for you. We're flying it from L.A. I don't remember much after that because I remember my roommate knocked the door down because all he heard was bobbling some noise in my room, and he thought I was having a stroke or something. When he door, I'm crying, just snot coming out, you know. Call my sister. My sister, what are you talking about? So I went to HR. 3 days later, I had the kidney in. Almost 4 years ago. The doctor told me that kidney is good for another 30 years. You're not, but the kidney is. Me and my doctor, we got that sense of humor. Then, a year later, I start feeling this little pain here. Something bothered me. I go see my, first of all, I can't do my job. I'm working at the public defender's office. I'm senior substance abuse assessor for the public defender's office. And my job is to review cases where we believe that the guy is in custody or having legal problems because a drug and alcohol problem. Not a criminal, but a guy that needs help. I review, the attorney gives it to me, I review, I go and I interview the guy. If I think that he might benefit, I would go and vouch for him at treatment programs and find a bed that he needed. Social model, a clinical, medical, a behavior modification, whatever they needed. And when I got a call from those programs, hey, George, I got a bed for you. I would call the jail and say, release inmate such and such, I'll pick him up tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning. On my call, this dope fiend, alcoholic, got a drunk that was living right in the sidewalk by the building, can do stuff like that. I can't. He can't. I let him. So with that job, I couldn't do it anymore. All of a sudden, I'm going there. One day, I'm supposed to go to Las Colinas to see a couple clients, and I'm physically beat. And I pull in 7-Eleven and have those little black extra shot things that you have. I had like 8 of them and a little bit of coffee, chalk it down. I could barely drive. I was so tired. Started crying. I realized, now I know what it feels like. A ball player that's really good at his game. And all of a sudden, the skills start going away because of age and because of medical conditions and injuries. He can't steal bases. He can't run. His eyesight's gone. And he has to. And the only reason he's in the team is because what he meant to the team before, what he has accomplished, and because of his reputation. And that was me. I realized that. I cried. Went up to the office. Saw my boss. Said, "Boss, I don't think I can do this anymore. I'm going to call it quits." She was happy. I'm not the easygoing guy. Like I said, I don't play well with others. And the field is changing. You know, before, I could go there and say, "Hey, you want recovery?" And the kid goes, "Yeah, but I want it." They say, "Okay, go fuck yourself. You're not ready for recovery." "Oh, what do you mean?" He goes, "I'm not here for what you want. I'm here to tell you what I have, and you know, that simple." And I put no, and I go. Now, if you use that word, and I got to write a 3-page dissertation to the attorney, to the judge, why I used the F word. Things have changed. You know? So, like my sponsor would tell you, when I did my fifth step, he looked at me and goes, like, "You have a control issue? This air controlling, this controlling this, and having a division?" He said, "Yeah. If you have a control issue, the best thing for you is to become a manager at a treatment program. Then you get to control a whole bunch of people." And I was told that I did too many people's inventory. I became an assessor. "I don't take your inventory anymore. Now I assess you. I have a diploma in the wall that I can say I can talk about you." You know, remember, you know, it's always a way around. So, where am I? Okay, I need to get to my fifth step real quick and the shopping thing. But anyway, the thing is that my life has progressed, but it's not been roses, but I'm making roses. It doesn't matter where I am. I'm the happiest. I just achieved what I want to say right before 16 years. I've achieved the nirvana of AA. And it's not that I don't give a flying. It's that I don't think about yesterday and I don't think about tomorrow. I think about today. Actually, sometimes I think about what I'm going to do next. I have a meditating room at home. It's called the Blue Room. The guys use it for other things than meditating, but, you know, some of them live in a bunk room and all of a sudden they got a female friend. "Hey, George, can I use the Blue Room?" "Sure." Anyway, the thing is that I can actually sit straight in that room, you know, meditating chair type thing, and think about nothing. I thought that was the wrong thing. My doctor said, "Oh, I have this green drink?
Green juice.
Green juice. The one other guys are selling. My blood, for the first time since I remember, they took me off a high blood pressure medication. And mind you, I just had 2 Death Wish coffees. If you know about coffee, Death Wish is top of the line. Anyway, this juice keeps me going. But when I'm meditating, I zero out. I don't think about nothing but what I'm going to do next when I get from that meditation stage. And it'd be have a cup of coffee. It'd be go to the bathroom. It'd be call somebody. That's all I think. I can't think of nothing else. And eventually, my mind goes blank. And then 30 minutes pass, and I go like, "Oh, shit, what happened?" I thought that I was falling asleep sitting up. My doctor, who's from India, says, "No, Ansel, you're meditating." "What do you mean?" He goes, "Your head go blank? You know how hard that would be for a normal human being?" You know, "I guess so." So it's working because I cannot afford. I'm 60 years old. I might have 2 years. I might have 10 days. I might have 10 more years. With my luck, I'll have 20. But whatever I have, I'm going to make the most out of it. What I'm not going to let is other people in other places get in me. And that's a hard thing. Now, yes, once in a while, the guys will tell you, I have to remind him who the cock of the hen house is. Put my foot down, this is going on in the house, wop, wop, wop. But that's just par for the course. I used to do that at the Freedom Ranch for 7 years. The Freedom Ranch, I ran 50 guys, and I had to have an attitude. So they call me the Puerto Rican Nazi. News, my mom is from Nazi Germany. I mean, her parents are from Nazi Germany, and I'm from Puerto Rico. So there is a little of it there. So anyway, so I got the kidney. A year later, the pain, throat cancer. So I got squamous cell. I go in, they put the mask, and they do the radiation treatment. Beat cancer. But my mouth can only open this wide. I will never be able to have a hamburger. It fused my jaw. And to eat a hamburger, I got to put it between two paper plates, step on it really tight, and then, which I do. But good thing is, I eat really good. I love cereal, and I'll have six bowls a day and oatmeal and all that stuff. But, every once in a while, I have a real good meal. Picture me with about, 90 more pounds? So it's a great diet. People look at me, George, you changed. Boy, you lost a lot of weight. I said, yeah. I said, I got a good diet. Really, what is it? Cancer. Worked for me. I'm alive. I'm happy. The point I wanted to make real quick was that in my fifth step, I have a problem, and I don't know if any of you guys had that problem. As much as I love the person that I gave my fifth step at the time that I gave my fifth step, I didn't know him. And my NA sponsor, because I got two, NA sponsors, Daniel Y, would not come up to the ranch. He said, no, I'm not talking to you until you finish the program. I can call him, but the steps would work later. So in my head, I was not going to give another alcoholic or drug addict information about me, because some of us have committed stuff that should not be in anybody else's head. I'm sorry. They told me, oh, you can tell your mom. You think I'm going to put my mom through hell? Think every time, oh, my son did this for me to be happy? No. So I came up with an idea. I drove my little station wagon all the way to Arizona. Called a central, say, hey, where's the meeting? They told me right around the corner. Okay, 30 minutes. Wait 30 minutes, went to the meeting. The guy named George gets up to share. Really, really old. I like what he says. So when he comes out of the meeting, I shake his hand. I said, sir, can I buy you a cup of coffee and do a quick fifth step? He goes, sure. Where are you from? None of your fucking business. So he looks at me, he smiles. We go into this coffee shop. What I thought would take 15 minutes took about 3 hours. We cried, we prayed, we laughed. We went through everything. Snot coming out of my nose, tears, laughing, It was great. And then, here's the funny part. At the time, he actually asked me about my last name. I said, you don't need to know that. George M. That's according to age. And he started laughing about stuff like that. But at the end, when we walk out, we shake hands, we hug. And he goes, that's awesome, George, that you were able to do that. Well, I said, thank you, George. And then he said, I have a piece of advice for you. Next time you do this and you pick somebody, make sure he's not a retired police officer. My knees weakened, my lips got pale. He goes, oh, I'm an A first. All I was thinking, I hope he dies quick. So anyway, he asked me, where's my car? I said, none of your business. So I stood there, waited for him to leave, and then I walked around the block a couple times, jumped in my car, and whoop, never been back to Arizona. And I want to make sure that after 20 years, I might be able to go if I get to 20 years over, because by then he's got to be dead. So anyway, going to the shopping part, you hit it in the nail. I'm 50 years old, okay? I go shopping. I stand in front of something, and I look at it and start laughing. And I call my friend, Mike Ryan, good friend. I said, Mike, I'm 50 years old. For the first 19 years, my parents took care of buying it for me. After that, 15 years, the Navy took care of buying it. And after that, California Correction Department CDC took care of it. Then the feds took care of it. And then the Freedom Ranch took care of it. I'm 50 years old. I never bought toilet paper. What brand do you buy? The best piece of advice he gave me, and I'll give it to you. You can cut corners and everything. Shampoo, 99-cent store, whatever. Comes up to toilet paper, top shelf. Go for the best. I've stuck to that. No matter what, top shelf. But that's what, when you talked about going shopping, I freaked out. Because I went like, oh, crap. Grab stuff? Oh, I can cook. I can buy this. Oh, wait a minute. I don't have any salt. I don't have pepper. I need to have the condiment. Oh, shit. Start all over again? And I was 50, but God blessed me with friends, with ways to do things, and God bless Google, because you can Google anything. So, moving real quick, I recently, because of my medical condition, I got tired. I retired early from the public defender's office. I have a house at Taos Drive, and we call it Taos House, and it's, you know, I rent rooms to pay the rent. It's not sober living. It's not, and it's structured living. Five simple rules. I'm always right. Clean after yourself. Be respectful. Let me know when you're bringing up somebody. And George is always right. We'll get along just fine, as the guys. I have a blast. I used to drive a Mercedes. I drive a 98 Dodge Caravan. And they call it the druggy buggy, or sometimes the molester buggy, because it got tinted windows. And I've achieved everything I wanted, because just yesterday I put a little Hawaiian girl in front of it, the little dancer. I went from having it all and being somewhat happy to having it all I need and being super happy. There's nothing in this life that can bring me down. And it's not because of my experience. It's because I have a God. Now, when my kidney went bad, I've always asked, why me, why me, why me? 5 days ago, I got to call my beautiful older sister, who had an emergency hospitalization, and she woke up with tubes and dialysis and started doing dialysis. And I called her, and she was scared. And I told her, Cookie, now I know why God put me through this. I said, why? For me to be there for my beautiful big sister. She started crying. I said, there's always a purpose. You have to find it. Sometimes, my mom explained to me, she saw me sober for 7 years before she passed, and a sword, which is what she considers me, needs to be heated, pounded, folded, heated, pounded, eventually shine in a good age. And she said, you're an instrument of God. Go forward and fight for him. Because he hated you and pounded you pretty hard. But there's a purpose. Not too many people can take it. You know how many people are out there drunk that couldn't do what you're doing right now? Sitting down for an hour listening to some Puerto Rican talk about sobriety? Come on. You know, they can come up with 100 million excuses. No. It takes a special person to come into these rooms, either for 20, 30 years, or for 30 days. Question that I've been asked, how many times do you help an alcoholic drug addict? Answer that I give, as many times as the big book tells me. And when they go, oh, it doesn't say in the big book, you get my point. It doesn't matter how many times I'll see you here, I won't be here for you. I'm going to change tactics, because being a service is what helped me. Now I get to help people, and I don't get paid for it. And that made a big difference in my life. My sobriety depends on my attitude and my gratitude. If I am grateful, my attitude is okay. And whenever that is, and I heard this in the meeting, whenever I start going bad inside and getting spoiled, I'm a refrigerator. When your refrigerator starts going bad, the food starts going bad inside, you know why? More likely, it's unplugged. That means that I've unplugged myself from the program. Sometimes I need to plug. Sometimes I make 7 meetings in a week. Sometimes I make 1 in a week. I make a meeting whenever the big book tells me to make a meeting. Again, I'm old-fashioned. I was taught by the old-timers by the big book. Hazelton, all that's good for impressive girls and all that old crap. But, you know, reality, big book and 12x12, that's all I read. Because that's what got our founders here. I have a CD of Bill W. in 1940, I believe, in 48 or something like that, where he spoke. And he spoke and he talked about he said, my name is Bill W. and I'm an alcoholic, and he talked about him. Not once did he tell the crowd what to do. Not once did he say, my name is Bill W. and I'm a real alcoholic. No. He said, Bill W. alcoholic. I try to imitate those that succeed in front of me. I try to emulate you guys, and I try to be a service. God's put me through this drill for me to be able. Now I am a sponsor for dialysis. I'm a sponsor for a new kidney. I'm a sponsor for cancer survival. I'm a sponsor for Alcoholic Anonymous, Narcotic Anonymous. But I'm going to have to start going to meetings for Shopping Anonymous. The guys laugh. Wish, shopping, that's me. But again, I'm actually in the process of praying. The same way I quit smoking 14 years ago. I prayed. I used the same thing. I admit I was powerless over tobacco. And now I admit I'm powerless over vape because I never vaped. Somebody just sent me a real nice Hawaiian cigar. He said, oh, just take a puff. I said, no, because then I'll have to say, I haven't smoked in 14 years, but I took a puff. No, I'd rather say I haven't smoked 14 years. Take a picture of me like I'm doing it and give it to one of the smokers. I'll put it up for forbidding. I have a great life. And it's not all cherry, guys. It's, you know, I know that some people, oh, I hate these people that come up and say what a great life is. I'm not telling you that life is easy because it's not. But you know why it is? It's worth it. Especially if you can make a difference. I've put needles in my arm. I've done just about every drug there is. There's no better high for me than having a relative, a daughter, a husband or a wife come up and give me a hug and say, thank you, what you did for my loved one. That's the best high I get nowadays. Get a sponsor. Follow the steps. No matter what, you don't drink. You know, there's a bunch of jokes about that. I'll put your token in your mouth when it dissolves. You can have a drink. No matter what, don't drink. You know? And if you ever want to reach for me, you can reach for me. Because, the reason I found the kidney was because they posted on Facebook. So Mama, I'm a Facebook whore. I owe Facebook my life. I sent them a letter. They did a little thing. The newspaper here did a thing because of it. The point that I'm trying to make is, if you want to reach me, George Martinez, GTM 315, that simple, at Yahoo, I'm there. I post a lot because I'm hoping that it makes a change. People say, I want that. I want to be there. I want to get where he's at. And they can reach, and I can tell you. Read the big book, follow directions. Thanks for letting me share, and God bless you.